Now to social media, and specifically to Twitter. Facebook is the behemoth of social mediums. More than half of the Australian population uses it. Twitter is different. It's smaller, shoutier, and much less popular than Facebook. It does attract a lot of media people. But who else, apart from other shouty types? Well, Steve Factor of Idea Factory has been thinking about this a lot. He divided the Twitter population into 10 different groups, the biggest of which he calls the undead.
Yeah, the undead are represented and unrepresented at the same time in the Twitter population, because about 60% of the accounts on Twitter are inactive. They exist. Maybe someone signed up, stopped using it. Maybe someone has multiple accounts. But the reality is that there's also a big attrition rate. You know, some people who can't figure out how to use it properly will sign in, do a few tweets, and then disappear. But their account stays on the books. So in terms of activity, only about 40% of the accounts are active.
But I know some people, mostly journalists or producers, who seem to be like that. They're not tweeting, but they're following some interesting people and organizations and this. They're using it to generate leads and stories.
Yeah, those people I would put into one of the other two categories. So one is a fan, and by fan, I know there's a derogatory version of that term, and I don't mean it in that way, but a fan is someone who is interested in following someone or something. It could be a topic, it could be a company, it could be a product, could be an individual. So whatever that is, they have a purpose for being on Twitter. Now, scouts are a little bit more proactive. Scouts are typically news hounds or people who are really interested in scoops or the newest, latest thing. So for them, it's almost like a curation that they're doing. They're on there looking for stories, looking for ways to share the newest and greatest gadgets or reviews or photos or meals they've had or restaurants they've discovered. And in some cases, it's a news-breaking situation as well.
Yeah, it's the category that you identify that's closest to being a reporter with Twitter as the medium.
Exactly. And there are several models that are being created now where people are using Twitter as the sourcing mechanism for stories that are to be written. One really good example of people, it's not so much that they're using Twitter, but, you know, there are some radio shows that have a live Twitter feed, and they respond in some cases, or they'll ask the audience to clarify something, and the audience will then do the research. Some people use discussion boards that way, but now some others are using Twitter to have that instant responsiveness. So instead of researching, the research comes to you.
It is the medium that journalists and program makers have jumped on, and we may be getting to the kernel of why this is, because you've got a category called the networker, and you call it the most ambitious, optimistic, and sometimes delusional group. What are they doing?
Well, networkers are the best and the worst of Twitter in a lot of ways. They have a reason for being on there. They think it'll advance their career. They think it's a good way to meet or connect with the kinds of people they either want to follow or want to know. They try to engage with them. Some of them buy followers just to appear more popular than they are, and others are really just over-managing this account and investing a lot of time and energy in something that might be misleading them. And what I mean by that is Twitter and a lot of social media platforms give you the impression that fame is made on those platforms. So people think that the more they interact, they'll be discovered, or someone will go, oh my God, that is the wisest 140 characters I've ever experienced in my life. But that's not the reality. The reality is that's not how people get known or how people get discovered or valued. That still happens in the real world. You still have to do something meaningful. You still have to make something meaningful. You have to write a great book, cure a disease, do something in the real world, and then you can manage that influence in a way on this network, because it's a really good way for managing existing influence but not creating new influence. And that's a distinction some networkers don't quite manage well.
Well, that brings us to where some performers and presenters and columnists in particular, they have been the great beneficiaries of Twitter. They're in a category you call the e-lebrities.
Yes, the e-lebrities are, I call them the working class of celebrities, because we all know who George Clooney is, we all know who all of these A-listers are, but there's this whole other class of media people, podcasters, writers, authors, journalists, TV announcers. These are people who may not be at this upper tier where they're recognized by the masses, but they do have, in some cases, very loyal followings and people who want to buy their books, show up to their appearances, and this is probably the best medium to engage with them without ever having to break out a crate of Purell to in case they're worried about germs and hugging them in real life. But the e-lebrity is, in my opinion, the greatest example of this because, you know, if you look at people who are podcasters, people like, I use Joe Rogan as an example, he has a very popular podcast. You know, he had a big TV show. He hosts MMA and some other things, but his real popularity is derived from his podcast, and that's free. So the way he makes money is through live shows, and he'll announce a live show on Twitter, and his fans will sop it up and show up. In fact, they're so loyal, they'll even buy tickets to people he recommends, or they'll buy the books of people he's had on the show. So I think it's a really powerful platform for people at that next tier, because it's much more connected to how they make a living.
Yes, that's where the networkers want to get to, isn't it? Now
it is, and most of them don't, and continue plodding away regardless.
Now, you mentioned the George Clooneys and I suppose the Lady Gagas and the like. They're the stars, and in a way they're less interesting for this discussion. The next category that really is, though, is the media company. So the content professionals themselves, their corporate entities, they're big on Twitter, aren't they?
They are, and they better be, because, you know, listen, their whole business is producing content. So they want to maximize shareability regardless of platform. So if you're spending $1 million an episode or even $500,000 an episode producing your TV show, or you're spending a ton of money on your website and writers and reporters and so on, if you're CNN, you better make sure that your content is shared. So it's almost part of their job. It's their core business. So I literally separate media companies from other organizations because media companies by design must be shareable regardless of the network because it's not for them to decide how people want to share it. So if someone are Twitter users and others are Facebook users, that doesn't matter to them. They're creating metric tons of content and they want to be as distributed as they can be.
And you can understand that, I think. That's Steve Factor. And I should give you the list, actually, because we didn't talk about all of Steve's categories. There's the undead, that got to mention, the protector, the chirper, the fan, the networker, the scout, the star, the e-lebrity, the media company, and the organisation that's not a media company. Now, you're probably not one of the last two. But if you want to work out what kind of Twitter user you are, head to our website. You'll find it at abc.net.au/Radio National. We'll put a link there to Steve's article. It's also the place to go to listen in or set up the podcast. That's about it from me. I'm Richard Adie. Thanks to producer Kyla Slaven. Our sound engineer is Paul Goff.